A production of SDPB, South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Got all the buttons pushed. Good morning, everyone. Call to order, Senate Commerce Committee. I'm Tom Nelson, substituting for Senator Olson. He should be with us shortly. Please remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones and pagers, and the secretary will call the roll.
Edelstein?
Here.
Gant?
Here.
Merchant? Nesselhoff? Turbeck-Berry? Nelson?
Here.
Olson? There is a quorum.
Thank you. Would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of our previous meeting. Motion by Senator Gant and second by Adelstein to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. Voice vote. All in favor say aye. Those opposed nay. Motion carried. Thank you. We have before us first on the calendar, and we'll go through the calendar in order. House Bill 1099, revise certain provisions regarding insurance coverage for residential property that is destroyed under construction. And we will take proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. Margaret Gillespie, Senator, District 16.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 1099 is a bill to give some additional opportunities to consumers here in South Dakota regarding insurance coverage. Mr. Chairman, current law is stated there in Section 1. You can see existing statute is provided here, an amendment there too within the bill. Current law, the value of the amount stated in the policy is conclusively determined to be the value of the property, as you see there in 58-10-10. What we're asking to do is to add a provision for a home builder's policy on section, page 2, subpart 4 is the portion that we're asking to add. Right now, the only way to insure property that's in the progress of being constructed is through a builder's risk policy, and that's the language you see under subpart 3, where a contractor can obtain a builder's risk policy and then obviously would likely surcharge that to the owner of the property for the cost of the insurance. What this will do is add in a provision in law to allow insurance on property that's in the process of being constructed. And, Mr. Chairman, I think it's fair to say that in reality, unless you obtain a builder's risk policy, I think it's fair to say that it's really impossible to get a policy of this nature in South Dakota because of the complications that exist with the language there in Section 1, 58-10-10. And so I'm going to defer to others that are more informed on this issue than I, but I would be happy to stand by for any questions that committee may have.
Thank you, Senator. Proponents for 1099. Welcome, Mr. Thiessen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Dick Thiessen. I'm an attorney here in Pierre, and I represent State Farm Insurance Companies. House Bill 1099 is a bill that would amend what we call the valued policy law. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, I think the best way for me to explain what the bill does and why is to use an example. The valued policy law is stated in Section 1 of the bill, and that simply says that if you buy a valued policy, it pays the amount stated in the policy, and that amount is conclusively the value of the property at the time of the loss. Well, that works fine if you buy a valued policy on your home and it's completed, okay? The difficulty arises is that product is not often available to people during construction of the home. Because, for example, if you bought a valued policy and it said that it pays $500,000 at the time of loss, and that is the conclusive amount to be paid, and the house burns down when we have $50,000 worth of construction done, that policy would have to pay $500,000 for a value which was realistically only $30,000 or $50,000 at the time of the loss, whatever construction was completed. So it is a deterrence, I guess, for that product to become available to folks while they're building a home. I recently built a home, and the only way you can insure your risk correctly is if you use a builder's risk policy. And if you will, if you just look at the bill with me a moment, I think it'll become clear. Section 1 says, and this is existing law, that if you have a valued policy and there's a loss, it pays the amount stated in the policy. Subsection 1, 2, 3, and et cetera are all exceptions to that valued policy law, because we recognize in subsection 3, you will see, that in the case of builder's risk insurance, it should be different. It should pay the value of the property at the time of the loss. And that's why builder's risk insurance does that. The problem arises when you try to make another product available, which is typically the product of a valued policy law that you buy for your home when the home is concluded. So you really want that policy to have a designated, conclusively stated amount, but that is intended to be the amount that is paid for that home when it's completed. So what this bill would do in Section 4 is it really does the same thing we do for builder's risk insurance in Subsection 3. It says that in the case of a valued policy, in the event the property is under construction, it would pay or should pay that amount which represents the value of the property at the time it was lost. So if the case I gave you was a $500,000 home and you want to insure your home for that amount under a valued policy, it would pay that amount when the home is concluded in construction. However, if the house is under construction at the time of the loss, it would be required to pay that amount which represents the value of the property at the time of the loss during its construction. I'd be happy to answer any questions. We believe that it would allow a product to be used more readily for those folks who are building a home, because right now you buy a builder's risk policy if you want to try and insure your loss during construction. And the way those work is that policy is actually taken out by the contractor, and that contractor adds it back into the value of what they're charging for the construction of the home at the time. Whether that's surcharged or not, sometimes a little hard to find in the construction agreement that you have with the builder. I know when I built my home, I had a little trouble finding out where it was and how much it was. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Teason. Additional proponents for 1099? Mr. Moses, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. State Farm approached us on this legislation 6-8 months back. They have a homeowner's policy that they've offered for sale in South Dakota, and they were considering adding an additional coverage to it, that is the builder's risk coverage that's not currently in their policies. And they asked us about, well, would the valued policy law apply towards their policy on the builder's risk portion if, in fact, they wanted to add that coverage? And our answer was yes, the valued policy law would still apply, which meant that even though somebody was under construction, maybe completed 10 or 20% of the construction, and the tornado comes by and blows the building away, they're stuck for the whole 100% of the full value of the policy with the value policy law. Obviously, they weren't interested in writing that coverage if they had that extra risk associated with the 100% of the full value of the coverage when it's under construction and not completed. We support this legislation because this offers consumers an alternative to buying a separate builder's risk policy. They can, with this legislation, insurance companies can and we believe will add builder's risk coverage to homeowners' policies, therefore giving customers an additional choice, additional opportunity to buy insurance that may be more competitive. I'll stand by. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. Additional proponents for 1099? Proponents, 1099? Are there opponents to 1099? Opponents to House Bill 1099? Seeing none, I will close to testimony and open up for committee questions and or discussion. We have a motion by Senator Turbeck Berry for due pass and a second by Senator Gant. Discussion? Hearing none, the Secretary will call the roll. Vote aye or nay.
Aye.
House Bill 1099, receiving a due pass recommendation, will go to the floor. Motion by Senator Gant, second by Nesselhoff for consent. Their discussion? It's a voice vote. All in favor then say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Thank you. It will go on consent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. We'll now move to House Bill 1018, an act to require a portion of the annual report filing fee paid by certain entities to be deposited in the financing statement and annual report filing fee fund. Secretary Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State. House Bill 1018 is the solution to an ever-increasing problem with the filing of corporate annual reports. And I want to share with you how this problem looks from a couple different perspectives. And the first perspective is from the 56,000 corporate entities that are filing these reports with the Secretary of State. These are going to be for-profit corps, nonprofit corps, LLCs, other business structures that are required to file these reports. And essentially, we as a state are requiring them to use 1980s technology to file these reports. The Secretary of State prints the reporting forms. We mail them out to the corporations. They fill them out by hand or typewriter. They mail them back into us with the filing fee. If the report is incorrect or the incorrect fee, we have to send it back out, and we send it back and forth. And it's a really antiquated system that we as a state are using to file these reports and collect the filing fee. And my position is that in today's modern business environment, there's no place for that type of service, and we as a state ought to be doing better than that. And frankly, we have a responsibility to do better than that. That's the perspective of the filers. Now, the perspective from my office's position is this, and if I might, Mr. Chairman, could I hand out, to have the pages hand out a couple different sheets?
Yes, that's all.
I'm handing out two different graphs. And the first graph that I'd like to refer to is the bar chart that shows the increase in the number of corporate annual reports that are filed in the Secretary of State's office. And since 1991, the number of these filings has increased by 133%. And as you can tell, that trend doesn't show any sign of stopping. It's a continual increase. The second chart I handed out is our FTE allocation in the Secretary of State's office since 1991. And as you can see, there's been a 17% decrease in FTE in our office. Now, if you look at these two charts independently, these are both very positive trends. But when you put these two trends together, as a manager, all of a sudden you realize that at some point this doesn't work anymore. And members of the committee, I would share with you that we are at that point, that we are no longer able to efficiently and expeditiously handle the amount of paper that's coming into the Secretary of State's office. I would share with you, we've got about 4.5 FTE in our office that are assigned to the corporate division. They not only handle these corporate annual reports that come in, but they handle all the new corporations and amendments and questions that come in by telephone and email. They're a very, very hardworking group of people. We compare that to the state of North Dakota that has 9 in addition to temporaries, and so twice the staff in the state to the north. If I might ask for Bev Wilson to come in, and Bev is the supervisor of our corporate division, and I want to just give you a visual of the corporate annual reports that came in on Tuesday of this week. That's one day's worth of reports. And again, we've got 4.5 people that not only deal with those, but all of the other duties of the corporate department. And so within my office, we have an issue that needs to be resolved, and House Bill 1018 is that. So what does this bill do? This bill allows the Secretary of State to take $3 from each of the filing fees that is accompanied on these annual reports and put it into a fund for the next 2 years to allow us to develop an online electronic system for filing of these corporate annual reports. And after 2 years, that $3 would drop down to a dollar, and the purpose of that dollar, obviously, is for maintenance of the system and to pay for ongoing credit card fees and those type of expenses. We'll be able to develop a very efficient online system. It'll be quick and easy for corporations to file their annual reports. It'll allow for instant error checking so that as you're filing your annual reports, you can check and make sure that everything is right before it's actually submitted. The images of those reports will be immediately available to the public online, like all the rest of our reports are currently. The funds will be deposited immediately in the state general fund. It will reduce postage and printing expenses for us. It will eliminate the need to request additional FTEs, which we don't want. That's not the right answer. And the last thing I would say is it will be optional for corporate filers. There will be some that aren't going to want to do it electronically, and that's fine. We'll certainly still accept the paper forms. The fund that this money goes into will be the same fund that already exists for UCC filing funds. We take $3 of some of the UCCs that are filed with us that go into this fund to pay for operation of that particular department. We're going to use the same fund, and that's the fund that we use to develop the electronic filing system for uniform commercial code documents that is working very well. Lest there be any concern that we're going to accumulate some kind of a war chest in that fund, existing statute says that at the end of each fiscal year, any amount in that fund over $25,000 reverts to the state general fund, and so there's no ability to accumulate excess funds. Most important point that I can make today, we have 56,000 entities filing these reports every year. Since 1991, those entities have put $33 million worth of filing fee funds into our state general fund, $33 million. Over the next 2 years, it's estimated they will kick in another $7.5 million. They're paying the bill. They're paying the freight. The governor's got a bill in House Bill 1069 that's asking to increase those filing fees. And so my point would be we owe it to the people that are paying these filing fees to give them an efficient and modern system to file their corporate annual reports and get this done quickly and efficiently. House Bill 1069 is the bill that allows us to do that. As I mentioned, the governor's fee bill is in the Senate Appropriations Committee, and that fee bill allocates the money that we're talking about here to this other fund, and so that part is taken care of, so there won't be a hit on the state general fund. Again, the money issue is being dealt with over in the Appropriations Committee, and what I ask today for is your support for House Bill 1018 so that we can move this into the 21st century. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Secretary Nelson. Additional proponents for 1018? Proponents 1018? Are there opponents to House Bill 1018? Any opponents? If not, I'll close to testimony and open for committee discussion and or questions.
Questions for the Secretary. I can't help but ask, if you have four and a half FTEs, is the half the one that takes care of the bottom of the when you get more mail?
Thank you, Senator.
Additional questions, comments, discussion? Not, we'll close for questions and open for committee discussion and or action. Motion by Senator Gant, second by Senator Merchant for due pass. Discussion? Hearing none then, Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Terbeck-Berry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Ten 18, having received a unanimous vote, is consider due pass and will be sent to the floor.
No.
Move on to House Bill 1026, an act to revise certain provisions permitting cities and counties to issue full-service restaurant on-sale alcohol licenses. Proponents for 1026. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Matt Fonder. I'm with the South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation, and I'm here today to visit with you about the department's House Bill 1026. I'm having the pages hand out some quick speaking points that were sent to you electronically yesterday, and I will try to be brief. The purpose of House Bill 1026 was simply to clarify the statutes resulting from last year's Senate Bill 126. Is this on? Senate Bill 126 allowed cities and counties to adopt an ordinance and issue additional on-sale alcohol licenses to full-service restaurants so long as they met certain criteria. After the statutory provisions resulting from Senate Bill 126 took effect, the department received a request for declaratory ruling concerning the applicability of the statutory provisions to various situations. A declaratory ruling hearing was held on October 24th of 2008. The Secretary of the Department issued his declaratory ruling. That ruling was not appealed to Circuit Court, but the Department still felt the need to bring this bill to clarify the statutes. The Department has discussed the bill at length with representatives from the Municipal League, the Licensed Beverage Dealers, the Development Group of South Dakota, and others. As a result of those conversations, the department amended its original bill, and the end product was one that all the parties agreed would be best. House Bill 1026 does not substantially change the current law, and the department believes that this bill will clear up any confusion and will make things much easier for the cities and counties and the state on a going forward basis. With that, the department would ask that this committee pass the department's House Bill 1026, and I would be happy to stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fonder. Further proponents, 1026. Welcome, Mr. Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Tim Doherty. I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Licensed Beverage Dealers Association, and we support this legislation. My client initiated the declaratory judgment ruling action that raised some of the issues that are clarified in this legislation. And in addition to expressing our support for the legislation, I also want to express our thanks to the Department of Revenue and the department staff for all the work that they did over the summer and in the fall on the declaratory ruling issues, and also putting together this legislation and working with all the affected parties to come up with a bill that we think makes a lot of sense. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. Further proponents for 1026? Proponents 1026. Are there opponents to House Bill 1026? Any opponents to 1026? Hearing none, I'll close for testimony and open for committee discussion. Questions?
Mr. Chair, I just have to express my regret at the amendment that removes the word vittles from our from our code. I thought that was duly colorful and appreciated it greatly last year when it was in the bill.
So noted.
Chairman.
Senator Adelson.
I'd like to ask the gentleman from the department. I'm not clear on why you're repealing Section 8 in terms of the purchase price, which is going to be a very contentious issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Senator Adelson, the reason that we repealed that section in particular was because it was placed in an odd place in the code. That section, I believe, was placed in 35-4-2.10, where all the other provisions were 35-4-119 or 110 through 119 inclusive. We still have that determination of the fair market value requirement, and I believe it's Section 9, if I'm not mistaken. So we basically replaced that with a different section. Yes, if you look at Section 9, that's where the fair market value is.
Thank you very much.
I have a question on the talking points that you gave us via email, and again today, I appreciate those. Who is Mr. Borns?
I believe Mr. Borns is the vice president of the Licensed Beverage Dealers Association.
It wasn't indicated, so I didn't know if he was...
Yep.
If there was additional problem that he saw in the legislation. So,
Senator Merchant.
Thank you. Just wondering if you could give us a brief rundown of what the confusion was and how this solves it.
Well, there was multiple questions in the declaratory ruling. A lot of places in the statutory provisions, the word county was left out inadvertently. So questions came up as to, well, does this apply to the counties? And we believe that it clearly did, but we wanted to make sure that that was the case. A lot of the cities that were adopting ordinances, if you read the newspaper articles that would correlate with those, a lot of the newspapers would report that 60% of their revenues must come from the sale of food. Well, that's not how the statute's read, but that's what a lot of people were seeing it. So, you know, there was some confusion in how would it apply to a hotel, motel, restaurant, or how would it apply to an establishment that might have video lottery, and there were just miscellaneous questions throughout there. But those are some of the bigger ones.
Additional questions, comments? Not, I'll close to questions and comments and open for discussion and or action.
I'd move to pass.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Turbeck-Berry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
1026 has received a due pass vote and will be sent to the floor. Further discussion, 1026. House Bill 1028, revise certain provisions regarding the regulation of real estate appraisers and the conditions upon which a penalty may be imposed on a real estate appraiser. Proponents for 1026. 28,
Honorable Chair. Proponent. My name is Sherry Brand. I've asked the pages to pass out my speaking points. I'm the director of the appraiser certification program in the Department of Revenue and Regulation. The intent of our legislation this year is primarily corrective language. In 3621B-4, we're simply changing commerce to revenue to be consistent with the reorganization of Governor Round several years ago. In Section 36-21B-7, we found after we had adopted this statute that appraisers oftentimes violate our administrative rules and actually do not perform an appraisal. And this statute tied the secretary's hands to impose a monetary penalty unless an appraisal was completed by the appraiser and there were violations found in the appraisal. We've had appraisers that have accepted an assignment to perform an appraisal for a homeowner and cashed the check and then never did produce the appraisal. We disciplined the appraiser. That happened twice with that particular appraiser. We disciplined the appraiser, but we were unable to impose monetary penalty for unprofessional conduct. We've also had cases where appraisers have, or applicants to be an appraiser, have been untruthful on our government applications. We've taken the appropriate disciplinary action. However, we were not able to impose any monetary penalties that would cover our administrative costs for investigation and finaling the case either through hearing or by order. And I might add that many of these violations of just our administrative rules or statutes are intentional. And we believe that appraisers who are unethical, unprofessional, should have to pay for the administration costs of the department and not the good appraisers that abide by all the statutes, rules, and uniform standards. I do not have anything else to add, but I will stay for questions, Honorable Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Brand. Additional proponents for 1028.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Randy Vance. I'm a real estate appraiser here in Pierre. I'm past president and currently sit on the board of the Professional Appraisers Association of South Dakota. I also am the licensed appraiser that sits on the advisory council for the Department of Revenue and Regulations appraiser certification program. I'm also a registered lobbyist with the Professional Appraisers Association, but I might add that I'm probably one of the few that doesn't get paid. My colleagues have asked me just simply to let you guys know that the Professional Appraisers Association of South Dakota supports this legislation, and that's really the only reason I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vance. I was remiss earlier. I please remind everybody to sign in on the sheet legibly. Let us know who is testifying and who is in favor and against certain bills. We will go with additional proponents for 1028. Additional proponents, 1028. Are there opponents to 1028? Opponents to House Bill 1028. Hearing none, I'll close the testimony and open for committee discussion questions.
Second.
Motion by Senator Gant, second by Senator Trebek-Barry for due pass. Is there discussion? Hearing none, then the Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Trebek-Barry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote for due pass for 1028. We've sent to the floor. Further discussion?
Consent.
Consent, Trebek-Barry, second by Senator Olson. Voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. It will be on consent. Senator Olson, if you want the gavel, that's fine, but if not, you do want the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've conferred with our legislative research staff, and I'd like to ask the chair to refer back to House Bill 1026, and I would move a motion to place that bill on consent. I'm not used to riding in the co-pilot chair as of yet, so I was a little bit in ether at that opportunity, so I would hope that someone would recognize the motion for consent and get it through.
Second.
Granted, we refer back to 1026. There is a motion by Senator Olson, second by Senator Gant for consent. Their discussion? Hearing none, voice vote. All in favor say yes, or aye, pardon me. Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Thank you. I apologize for that. When I run mayor's meetings, I always say yes or no because there always is confusion. Senator Adelstein?
I just have tuna salad and whole wheat, please.
Yeah. do we have a count of the people in the room? Senator Alstein, the chair will confer with you after the meeting. Thank you for recognizing that. House Bill 1049. Proponents for 1029 reside certain... Pardon me. 1049. That's why I have glasses. Thank you. provide certain provisions regarding captive insurance companies. Mr. Moses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. This legislation deals with captive insurers, and just as a little background, captive insurers are, in their pure form, is a insurance company that's formed by a company or a business. They basically form a subsidiary, and that subsidiary acts to insure the insurance risk of the parent company only. They are not in the business of insurance generally. They're just there to insure the interests of their parent corporation. We've had a captive law on the books for quite a number of years, and it only provides for pure captive types arrangements. The original intent of the legislation when it was passed was to try and entice companies to come to South Dakota and form captive companies here in South Dakota. Quite frankly, we haven't been particularly successful. We've only enticed one company to form a captive in South Dakota. Recently, we've been approached by some folks that have some interest in coming to South Dakota to form captives, but indicated that the current statutes are too restrictive and simply are not in a manner that would allow them to do the kind of captive business they would like to do in South Dakota. So that was the genesis of this legislation, was to reform our captive law and make it more amenable for captives to come to South Dakota. Specifically, one of the main changes in this legislation that you will see is to allow for what's called a group captive. As I mentioned earlier, we just have pure captives under current law. A group captive would allow multiple companies to get together and form a subsidiary corporation to accept, again, only the risk of those parent companies that are providing insurance just for those folks only, not in the general market. We also just had to go back through and make some additional changes in the statute, because when you have a group captive as opposed to a pure captive, you're really talking about some extra risk involved. It's not, you're not just insuring your one company or insuring the other companies jointly. And so we did add some additional requirements for financial solvency purposes. Some of the things that I'll mention is that limitation that exposure where you would only have 10% of a capital and surplus to any one risk, unless there was a approval for, by the director for additional. Some of the other financial solvency requirements would be prohibit the ratio of premium and surplus to be more than 3-1, again, unless otherwise approved by the director. It also loosens up the captive law to allow different kinds of corporations. Current law is more restrictive. This bill would allow not just stock companies, but nonprofit and limited liability companies as well. That also opens up some opportunities for others to form captives that haven't before. We feel that this legislation strikes a good balance between opening up the statutes to allow additional folks to form captives in South Dakota, but yet maintaining the financial solvency regulation that's needed to make sure things are handled appropriately. And with that, I'll stand by. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. We'll interrupt testimony just for a minute to, looks like Senator Adelstein, your donut count just went up. I welcome you all, and I will allow Senator Olson the opportunity to introduce who've just come to visit us.
Members of the committee, I can honestly say that the most important fourth graders in my world have just arrived on the Capitol, which actually is my favorite day and reason for being in the legislature. The Madison fourth graders that have been writing us throughout the session have joined us today with their teacher, Mrs. Marletta Ike, and a good number of chaperones to help herd the stray cats as they go up and down the halls. And so if you would indulge me in helping welcome our fourth graders from Madison to the Capitol today.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Is Derek in the room? There's Derek. Derek and I have been have had a little correspondence, and I appreciate you coming. When I corresponded by email with your teacher yesterday, I was just tickled to see that you were here. Can you come up here for a second, please? because he is so generous with his correspondence, and he's been just wonderful to visit with. I do have a South Dakota State pin for Derek. And hope I can visit with you all later. We will continue with... Yes?
I would just like to, on behalf of everyone else, thank you for making the rest of the Senate look bad.
Well, you know, I've only been here 26 days, but it hasn't been that hard. We will continue on with proponent testimony for 1049.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Kurt Everson appearing here on behalf of the members of the South Dakota Bankers Association. I'm a registered lobbyist for them. We took some interest when the division brought Senate Bill, or House Bill 1049 forward. We had engaged in discussions with the division prior to session about an interest that the Bankers Association and its members have in forming and in looking at a new way perhaps to provide workers' comp and insurance coverage for the members of the SDBA. And we talked about alternative methods of self-insuring through under the auspices of the Department of Labor. We looked at 1049 as introduced and decided that was a preferable route for us to go. So we're pleased this bill is here. We're pleased to offer our support for it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Iverson. Further proponents for 1049. Mr. Murphy.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jeremiah D. Murphy. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls, and I represent as a lobbyist Avera. And Avera has been interested in the captive laws of South Dakota for some time, and it really didn't fit. And this modernization, if you will, is very, very helpful to them. One of the things that it helps them with is the not-for-profit element that they can form as a not-for-profit. That doesn't mean they won't pay taxes, but that means they can have a member organization rather than a stock organization. And there are many not-for-profits in South Dakota that pay taxes, but they are formed that way because they are member organizations rather than stock organizations. I can tell you this, that I think this is a wonderful bill. I 25 years ago, I was part of a group that formed a captive insurance company. We thought that our premiums should be much lower than they were, and we couldn't talk the underwriters into a better rate, so we were all in the same business, and we formed a captive. We had to form it offshore because there were so few laws in those days, but we just kept the same premium structure that the companies had kept on us, and we made considerable money. We just and it was a very, very useful captive, and so I know from real life experience that it's a good thing. Now, I think one of the northeastern states has 8,000 captives, and the reason I mention that is because about 25 years ago, probably 15 years ago, I promoted a bill that was passed that provided for the formation of trust companies in South Dakota. And that's become quite a business, particularly in Sioux Falls and Rapid City, because at about the same time, the legislature passed a law that eliminated the rule against perpetuities. And my only point in telling you this is that a lot of businesses have decided, or families have decided to bring their trusts to South Dakota. They've hired a lot of, it's been a lot of business for the banks, it's been a business for lawyers, it's been business for accountants, and it's been business for individuals who've become officers and directors and custodians of the trust and the trust property. So, and I don't know, I have no reason to believe that we can't do the same thing with captives, especially with a modern statute. So for that reason, as a citizen, I support this bill as well as a registered lobbyist, and I'll stand by and thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Further proponents? 1049.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome.
My name is Matt McCauley. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls and also a registered lobbyist for the SD Risk Management Group. You know, we have a few occasions every year where we're able to take a look at the laws we have on the books and modernize them and hopefully create an attractive business environment for certain industries in South Dakota, and this is one of those bills. My client consists of a company that would like to come to South Dakota should this happen and relocate a captive here. I've just passed out to you an article I just printed off. Actually, last night, the Vermont Senate has taken some action. When this bill was in the House, I passed out an article that the Vermont legislature would be considering this incentive. And really, the article just shows you how competitive the states are relative to this business and attracting these businesses to their state. And you know, in many cases, if you're able to take and get a business here, and it's not necessarily how many of these you can land in South Dakota, but just one or two of these key businesses that come to our state, get to do business here, develop a relationship, we can introduce them to our South Dakota way of life, and we have a lot of things to offer without having income tax, a favorable business environment. And candidly, one thing I can tell you as we talk to some of these, as I talk to lawyers nationally who have either trust companies here, and South Dakota has done a remarkable job with the trust companies, just how well received they are by the Division of Insurance, whether it's Randy or Wendell or the director. They're able to come to Pierre and get meetings the next day or the following day with people that are making decisions and drafting legislation. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, think and members of the committee, this is a great bill for South Dakota to help modernize our statutes and be competitive and move, hopefully, and expand on our one captive insurance company we have here. And also just tell members of the committee, too, as I understand, the minimum premium tax is $5,000. So we're talking about an additional $5,000 of minimum premium tax revenue to the state general fund that would be received each year for each one of these new companies we can attract with our favorable business environment. So with that, I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cawley. Further proponents for 1049? Any additional proponents 1049? Opponents 1049? Opponents to House Bill 1049? Hearing none, I'll close to testimony and open up for committee questions. Senator Trebek-Berry.
I have a question for any of you who cares to answer it. When our law was set up the way it was it merely a matter of oversight that it didn't allow what you're proposing today, or were there protections for South Dakota consumers that were believed to be necessary? And if so, what's the give and take as far as what are we giving up in terms of protections for South Dakota consumers?
Thank you. I'm Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. I was around for part of those discussions. I've been around for a lot of discussions over the years. as best I recall the situation, Senator, I think the initial reaction when we were asked to put something together was to be rather cautious. Pure captive is the most restrictive way of dealing with it, and the original statute was pure captives. We were, so to speak, dipping our toes into the water, and we really didn't have any folks that were directly interested at the time to promote saying, hey, that's not going to work, you need to do this or that instead. We were just kind of going on our own at the time, and like I said, took a pretty cautious approach, and quite frankly, it's been too cautious.
Well, Randy's still in the chair. Randy, one question I have, is this for casualty insurance or life, or what sort of companies are contemplated in this captive? Is there any restriction?
Senator Anastine, as far as who forms the captive, it could be anybody, but there is a restriction on the type of risks that the captive can assume, and the captive cannot assume life insurance, health insurance, or personal lines property casualty.
Edelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Trebek-Berry?
Aye.
Nielsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
House Bill 1049 is received to be passed with conditions in the House of Commerce or Senate Commerce Committee. Is there further action? Move consent, Senator Olson.
Second.
Second, Senator Merchant. Is there discussion? Hearing none, voice so at all. In favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Thank you. That concludes our calendar for the day.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Personal privilege again. First of all, I want to start off by saying that thank you for doing such a great job chairing the committee today in my absence. And on my return, I didn't see fit to upset the apple cart. You're doing a great job, and I appreciate it. While we have the fourth graders here, however, I would like to ask them, see if they've been paying attention in class. Now that these bills that we've heard today have made it out of committee, if they were passed in committee, where will they go next? Can anybody tell me? I think that you were the very first one to raise your hand right in the front row. Catherine. It'll, yep. And then after, if they successfully pass the Senate, then where do they go?
To the House Committee.
Yep. And then if they pass the House, way in the back.
To the House.
Yep. And then where, if they pass the House floor. Very good. You guys are doing a great job, and so is Mrs. Ives. Thanks again for coming, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys this afternoon as well.
Anything else coming for the committee? Entertain a motion to adjourn?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think, actually, they just earned 3 credits from SDSU right there.
Motion to adjourn. All in favor say aye. For those opposed, nay. We're adjourned. Thank you.